Welcome to the Design Imposter Podcast, the show where we explore the enigmatic world of imposter syndrome through the lens of design, community, and empowerment. I'm Monique Jenkins.
And I'm Jessica Vallis. We're your co-hosts of the show and the founders of the Creative Circle Collective, a design agency that strengthens community links for nonprofits and corporate businesses by creating impactful branding and websites. Join us as we explore the relationship between design, community, and creativity. Welcome to Design Imposter.
Welcome to the Design Imposter Podcast. I'm Monique Jenkins, and today we're going to be talking about what it's like to be a creative at a large organization.
That's right. We talk a lot about entrepreneurship and starting your own agency, but for some people, staying in a corporate environment is perfectly fine and acceptable. Not everybody needs to go down the agency owner path.
Yeah, so let's jump right in and talk about the landscape of a big organization.
So, some of the things with a larger organization is just obviously the scale, complexity, and opportunities. When you are by yourself, you are by yourself. When you are working with a larger organization, you normally would have a marketing department that you're working within or a team of individuals who are on the same mission as you. You have complementary skills, similar skills, and you are able to gather inspiration from each other and collaborate. This is something you're not going to get when you're just kind of stuck behind your computer.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about working as a single designer in a larger organization is I think you do get a little bit of the team element because you guys do working like cohorts or groups, or you have a senior designer who kind of comes up with initial concept and then you potentially are acting as production designer. But I think that you have to design on a smaller scale than what you would if you were in design school. So when you're in design school, you have the ability really to just like design whatever you want. You could take as long as you want, you know, within reason when a project is going to be due. But when you design for a corporate entity, you have a lot of restrictions in place, and those restrictions come from other designers or potentially your stakeholders.
Yeah, but I would say on the opposite end of that spectrum, when you are working for a larger corporation, you can afford to have larger ideas.
Yeah.
And you don't have to scale back because of smaller budgets. If you've got a team and there's a lot of different skill sets, you mm-hmm. can come up with a larger marketing plan and be like, hey, this is going to have video and social media and mailers and this. Mm-hmm. And it is so much more impactful than if you just did something your own and we're like, oh, I'm only going to do social media.
Agreed, if the company is willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
And you got to think about the bottom line. At the end of the day, whatever event or whatever design they're kind of, you know, building out for is probably for a reason, and they have to think about the bottom line.
I don't think it's an everyday occurrence, but
freedom,
you have that opportunity to make something that's really impactful.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing, I was talking to a former intern, Rebecca. She did our headshots for the podcast. And yesterday we went out for lunch. And she started her own little freelance business. And she does photography. And she's doing some social media marketing. And I was like, how is it going? And she's like, I started a part-time job just because I missed interacting with people.
Yeah.
Because I'm just behind my desk all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I completely get that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I miss that element of being like, hey, like, and this is why, I mean, some corporations are like, you have to be at your computer and I'm going to watch you. It's because you just miss like water cooler talk.
Yeah.
Bop it over to somebody's desk and be like, so what did you do this weekend? I got to tell you, I got some tea.
Yeah. That's the worst part for me. I don't need any of that. But I guess I get a lot of that from like events and things like that I run. You get like a sense of community when you work with other people in an environment and you build a relationship. Not to mention the daily, because we know how Jessica feels about the daily. But in the daily episode that you were referring to,
the workplace malaise.
Yeah, workplace malaise. They were talking about how younger designers or younger people in general aren't getting the promotions that they normally would at specific intervals because they don't have that community kind of focus that they do when you work for a larger organization and you're actually in office all the time.
Yeah. And then they also talked about, you know, like influences further down the line. You don't have connection. So if somebody else leaves the firm and they're like, hey, I know somebody who'd be great for this position.
Yeah.
Like, you just don't get that when you're by yourself.
Yeah.
And when you're a freelancer, I know plenty of people who they start as a freelance and then they're like, I had a bigger opportunity come up working for somebody else. So I took it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I think that white labeling usually does that, which mm-hmm. is that you have the ability to be part of a larger structure. You don't feel so solo. Being an entrepreneur can be very daunting at times. So working in a corporate environment, I think, gives you this sense of community that people are looking for, but also gives you the ability to kind of understand how corporate culture plays a larger part in your growth over time. So inside of navigating a corporate structure, I think that there's a big mindset shift that needs to happen with a lot of designers. When you're in an academic environment, I think that you have the ability to kind of like play around with your wildest dreams and like ideation in a grander sense. You can explore different paths and things like that. When you are working inside of a corporate structure, you have stakeholders, you have other designers, you have deadlines, and a bunch of different constraints that you have to work within. So you no longer are able to use the color palette that you love. You use the color palette that's most suited to your organization or to the specific project. You have a lot of restrictions and limitations that you have to adhere to.
So Wells Fargo rebranded like 3 times while I was there. Mm-hmm. And right before I was let go, they did a rebrand. And they had a color pink that we called Pepto-Bismol pink. Mm-hmm. And it was an option to use, mm-hmm. and we never used it.
Yeah.
We were like, hey, we don't have to. It's mm-hmm. a brand color. But personally, mm-hmm. and considering that, I mean, I don't know why you would put Pepto-Bismol pink in like a financial firm. And like considering who our stuff is going out to, mm-hmm. I don't know if pink
yep.
and that bright of pink is necessarily appropriate.
That's interesting. What, do you know why they picked pink? Just as an accent color?
Yeah, it was an accent. Oh, it didn't make sense to me. We didn't use it. They also had a purple that we seldom used. Some of the colors just came out of nowhere. Because when you think of the stark contrast between the yellow and the red of Wells Fargo, you're mm-hmm. like, how is that pink working in there?
Interesting. I'd be interested to sit in on that design conversation. How do you think corporate culture like helps or hinders creative process as a designer who worked in a very large organization?
Well, like you've mentioned before, there is a lot of restriction mm-hmm. and you can't live out your creative passions like you might be able to. But there is always like reinventing the wheel. Mm-hmm. So when I worked in my department, they were just very set on repeating the same thing over and over. When I joined, they're working in Quark. I had just graduated. I was like, nobody uses that. Mm-hmm. And I moved us over to InDesign. You have the opportunity to get your company on the best practices mm-hmm. and using better equipment because, you know, you're using it every day and mm-hmm. you can recommend it. And then there's, you know, maybe they've been using the same templates for a while. You can go back, reinvent the wheel a little bit, still keep it branded, but keep it fresh. Again, looking at what's trending and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think strategy-wise? So like you're a designer, you're in this environment. How do you keep your own personal like design integrity and the freedom of your own expression within this corporate environment? Because you really do have to restrain maybe your creative gifts inside of this corporate structure. Yeah.
There were so many times where I was asked to do something and I was like, ooh, I don't know if I would do that as mm-hmm. from a design standpoint. Like I've said before, you do at least 3 ideations. You do the one that your boss asked for, one that you would do, and then you do a middle compromise. And then you're able to explain why you did what you did, and how it matches best practices or, you know, design trends and styles. But it's not always going to get picked. You can, and especially if you're presenting these ideas again and again and again, and they keep getting rejected, mm-hmm. that could impact just how you feel about the workplace.
Yeah.
It is really encouraging though when you're like, hey, I think we should update this template. Here it is. It's still branded. And they're like, this is great. This is the update we needed to mm-hmm. feel fresh because we've been sending the same letterhead out to our clients for years, or we've been doing the same email marketing layout for mm-hmm. ages. So let's spice it up and do something different. And when you have a company that's open to that change because they know that, marketing is constantly changing and evolving, and design is constantly changing and evolving. So a company has to be willing to do that. And in order to change and evolve, you have to have minds that are willing to work and be creative.
Yeah.
And if you are working for a company that's like, no, then they're not a healthy fit for a creative. Mm-hmm. That being said, like they still need them.
Yeah.
But it's a give and take. You can either have that company that's very supportive of change and they're like, you know best, mm-hmm. you know how to do this, versus ones who are like, well, this is how we've done it and we're going to continue to do it this way. I just need you to change the pictures every month.
Okay. So I think there's a little bit of like a, so I'm going to do a little bit of a, like a give and pull if I had to answer the same question, which is, I think when I've worked on the marketing side of corporate entities, they've been a lot more freer in the like exploration of design. But I think as I've been on like the legal side, they have a very specific like nuanced thing of like what they can and can't do. So I think they're, at least at some of the companies I've worked for, there's been an opportunity for you to be really rigid, maybe potentially in the conceptualization of like a manual, like every, the text is always laid out in this specific way. It always uses this font. It always uses these colors. But I think the marketing side, you're trying to like pull people in. So I think that there's a lot more creative expression and freedom in that side of the business, in adherence of like color guidelines and stuff like that, but more freedom on marketing than I've ever experienced on like the more like corporate-y, maybe.
Yeah, I would say so, because we were working with financial analysts and their clients. They're not pulling in new clients from branded materials. You know, they're not sending them mailers and be like, hey, you know, come give me a lot of money and or like let me advise you on your stocks. They're not getting that from mailers.
Yep.
They're getting it and like strengthening the relationship with their client from having reports that are printed the same way every time, from sending them booklets with a review of all the analysts and their stocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's consistent every time. And I mean, that's good. You don't always need to reinvent the wheel, because the client knows what to expect. And when you are something like a financial firm or a law firm, that's important. You can't be, look like you're changing at a whim.
Yeah.
So you do have to have an effective design from the get-go.
I'm trying to think about my experience working for a financial publisher. I feel like that was a little bit more free than maybe more other financial publishers were. Because it was like financial advice from like finance gurus and like stock options and trading and stuff like that. But I do feel like we use like a color palette that I certainly wouldn't have expected a financial advisor. It was like orange and blue, which I guess is in
like
line.
Like a new age.
Yeah. But and we used illustrations of all of the financial editors. Like we had an illustrator come in, illustrate them in this like blue grayish kind of tint. And that's what we used, which is not what I thought that they were going to go for. And even the logo itself, I think, was a little bit
different. I would want to see those illustrations. I don't know. When I'm going to like a law firm site or like a financial advisor site, I need to see professionalism.
Yeah.
Like it's not the place. I don't want to say it's not the place for creativity.
Yeah.
But, you know, you need to look professional for your industry. And if your industry does have a lot of leeway, then yeah, you have more opportunity to be creative.
Yeah. I will say that our core audience was maybe 65 plus Caucasian males specifically. And he brought a lot of his audience segment with him. I don't think they really cared about the like cartoony-ish figure that we had in the financial brochure or about the color palettes and things like that, except for like probably like some readability issues with people. But I want to say that that was the only financial brochure that I worked on that was a lot freer in its design than any of the other ones I've worked on.
What about your time at Pandora? Because that's not financial. That's not law. That is a commercial product.
Yeah.
So how was it different for you?
I think that that was free as well. Like, I mean, every single year, Pandora does like a different ideation of their stores, or every other year, something like that, where they have, I think one year we did like watercolor. So our designs were all watercolor based. That was like one idea. We had another one that was like all pink or all green and things like that. So I think that I don't think that there was any like rigidness to their design perspective. I would say the only thing that was probably incredibly like rigid and always had to be done the same was the editing of the beads and the jewelry, because they had to go on the website. They had to be in like brochures and stuff like that. That was the only thing that I think was very specific. Everything else, I think you had the ability to have a bit of nuance too.
And with your saying like this year it was watercolors and the next it was like green and blue, that you have to go through a lot of documents and update them every single year. Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure some people are like, oh, this is redundant. But for me, like there were times, like I said, where the company rebranded a couple times and I loved going in and updating the templates because we didn't have the branding department updating our financial reports. That was us. So it was really nice to have branding come and say, these are the guidelines. And then we took them and created something new. Now, again, like I said, there was only like two or three mm-hmm. rebrands. So it's not like we've got to do it as often as Pandora. Mm-hmm. But I would see that as really fun and a chance to be creative based on the media.
Yeah. So maybe rebrand is too strong of a word because they always use the pink color, like that powder pink was like always a part of it.
The
yeah,
yearly
so they had
theme.
Themes every year, which could be different. And I think the restriction in it is that you're always selling beads. Like, that's the rigid part of it. It's like, how many different ways can you reinvent the wheel as far as, like, beads are concerned? But I think the beauty in it is the way that they were able to use these different elements in order to showcase the beauty of the beads, depending on, like, there was, like, a diversity push. So then we got, like, a lot of imagery of models who looked like me, which is not... wasn't typically their audience segment when I at least was working there. So like that was something fun and unique and interesting. Or they started using like really deep hues inside of the photography, which was different. And then I think we got to a point where like the powder pink was everywhere in a very like vibrant way. So I think that there was still like the corporate structure, which is like, hey, we're going to use pink. We're going to use this hue mm-hmm. of pink. And even when we did the watercolors, that was still the semblance of it. But able to use pink in different contexts.
Yeah, I think it allows you to also use it with what's on trend at the moment.
Yeah.
The beads stay the same. That's fine. Mm-hmm. And like for our stuff with the analysts, a lot of stuff had to stay the same.
Yeah.
We did have a little leeway with like, oh, we're going to change the font size mm-hmm. and we're going to do this. It definitely was not as creative as Pandora. Yeah. But yeah.
And then I think – the most freedom that I've probably ever had working inside of what still has to be a very corporate-y structured place was probably Politico, because you had the ability to have themes around events. So I think they host maybe 50 to 60 events per year. Every event has a different design to it, which means that it's different color palettes, different everything. The only thing that stays consistent is the Politico logo. And that was really exciting because I think there was a lot of creative expression in the idea that like every event is going to have its own theme. Some of them are recurring, so that theme will recur without. But every event essentially would be a little bit different, and you could use a bunch of different like design ideation, different stylistic like opportunities to express yourself. And that's where I had the most fun.
Yeah, I think if you are going for a very corporate look and – this is compared to being like a freelancer or an agency mm-hmm. owner. You're like looking at the month when you're thinking of content, for example. You're looking at the month, you're like, oh, it's Black History Month. Next month, it's Women's Month. And so you're gearing your content towards that specific month. Mm-hmm. Whereas a corporate entity probably has a theme for the year.
Yeah.
Different from Pandora. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even the Catholic Church has a theme for the year.
Yeah.
You know, it could be the year of Mary, the year of communion or mm-hmm. whatever it is. And they will theme a lot of things around that just to spice things up and like have change focus so you can understand the different facets. Mm-hmm. So I think on one hand, when you're doing the freelance stuff, you know, it's very fun to post pictures. Oh, we're here supporting XYZ cause. But when you're corporate, you're like, you know, carrying a theme through for the year, it shows consistency, reliability, and just it really gives that corporate front.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But so that to say, I think there is different types of corporate. I think, you know, obviously corporate in a financial setting is going to be really rigid. I think there are corporate in a new setting that's going to be a lot of freer. Corporate in an event planning setting is going to be a lot different. So I think corporate, depending on industry, will specifically allow you creative expression and freedom in some respects where it wasn't in others.
Yeah. So let's pivot a little bit and talk about the collaborative aspect of working in a large organization. And working with a large team, how does it affect the projects mm-hmm. that you work on? So obviously I talk about Wells Fargo because it's the only place I really worked for my entire career. And obviously we had very clear guidelines. I mean, we would get yearly publications with like refresh of the brand, 150-page PDF, and then we'd have to take testing on the brand. And it came with, you know, training on your fingertips. And I really appreciated that we were so educated on what we were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. And then my department, every year, we would come up with, like, a yearly bundle. Mm-hmm. And it would have a calendar and, like, a newsletter thing and a pocket guide of all the analysts. And every year we slightly updated it. And like when I first started, they had these tabletop calendars that you would like flip over. They'd stand up. Mm-hmm. But they were kind of like a a sloppy rebrand from Wachovia before mm-hmm. they were acquired.
Yep.
And they had cartoons on one side or like comics. And I just, it never sat well with me. But when the lead designer was out on vacation, I went and updated the calendar mm-hmm. and I presented it to my boss and was like, why don't we just have a hang down calendar that they can pin to like their clipboard or whatever. Yeah. Standard stuff. Mm-hmm. And then based on that design, they were like, okay, let's update the rest. Let's make sure that the front of this calendar looks like this because we didn't have that capability before. Mm-hmm. And it was really fun putting together this bundled package that we would literally seal with a ribbon. Mm-hmm. And just to see everybody's pieces come together in this like end of year packet. It was always like, yes, we made the deadline. Do you have a project that stands out to you where you were grateful to have a team around you?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I worked at a fintech organization, and I had a phenomenal, loving, I love them so much, team that we worked with. Joe, Kelly, let me see, Patrick, Shearing, what's the other one? Someone else, I'm missing somebody. But I loved being part of that design team. It was so special to ideate with people who are so crazy smart, smarter than me in a million different ways. But one of the things that I always really, really loved is we were working on a one-click application flow for a product and going back and forth on what the customer dashboard is supposed to look like. And Kelly specifically, the way that her mind works, the way that she ideates around design concepts is like light years ahead of me. But she did such a good job about like creating all of these different riffs of her design and then justifying them. She would put all of her designs together. She put like a little synopsis there that would tell you like why she headed down this direction, what her proof was from user testing and things like that. And I absolutely love that. And we'd get together as a team once a week and we'd like riff on each other's designs and like in person, like just riffed on each other's like ideas and concepts, and that's the best team that I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, when you have a team that can support you like that, and sometimes it's you supporting somebody else, mm-hmm. like they just inspire. Yeah. And as a creative, you need that.
Yeah, I felt so like seen and heard and loved inside of that corporate environment with those specific people because I felt like they understood and they got it. And we were able to challenge each other's ideas and concepts. Like we could be like, oh, you know, why did you use this color? Or did you think about this construct and things like that? And it was never like, why are you critiquing my design? It was, oh, I didn't even think about it in that way. Let me change this. What if we did this here? So we'd all be inside of a Figma file together, just like copying and pasting off of other people's boards and like putting things together. And then that way, when we present it to our stakeholders, it was something that we all had a piece in, that we all loved, that we all could contribute. And then sometimes Kelly presented things and we didn't even need to comment because it was perfect. It was just magic.
Yeah.
What she put together was absolutely incredible.
Yeah. We're working with Andre for mm-hmm. our new logo and he puts things together in Figma. And yes. I'm like, yep, this is fine. This is perfect. We can go as is. This is good.
He's probably like, these are the easiest people I've ever created logos for. But we really from the creation of the Pinterest boards that we make for him as our design inspiration and the way that he articulates, even the way he presents out the logo concepts to us, it's just so seamless and we can understand his thought process and his logic. And believe me, if you created a logo with me, we'd have revisions.
Oh yeah, we'd have a lot. And yes. But the good thing is, and this is the designer in us, mm-hmm. is when he sent us the first version of the Creative Circle Co., we both pulled it up and we edited it.
Yep.
And we sent it to each other. We're like, if he could just do this part, mm-hmm. it would be perfect. But that's kind of like the process that you were talking about.
Yep.
Is somebody presents an idea, mm-hmm. other people come in. I mean, most clients are not going to be like, let me color on your design. Mm-hmm. But it was a collaboration.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that makes design so much more special. In talking about like team structure and context, was there ever a point in your corporate career where team dynamics just weren't working well and you had a problem? And how did you deal with it?
The whole time. Everybody that worked in the department was my mom's age. Mm-hmm. I was the youngest person there. I would get accused of like flirting with people who were my own age. There were not that many on the analyst floor. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, what are you doing on Friday for dinner? Like, let's make mm-hmm. you know, similar age coworkers, and they'd be like, "You're flirting too much on the analyst floor."
They're like, that's not what's happening here, guys.
Yeah. Or just like they're talking about their families and like, "Oh, I've got to go to my daughter's recital." And I'm like, it is the middle of the workday. We have a deadline on Friday. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you doing? And like not understanding that. And then mm-hmm. like me almost resenting it a little bit. Now as a parent, I'm like, you know, I really, first of all, I hate recitals. I hate like school plays and stuff. So I will not be going to them. Sorry, George and Finn.
Sorry, Zuri, I also will not be a part of that.
I'm not participating. But, like, understanding that, like, there are people relying on you, mm-hmm. and you're just going to dip out for, like, an hour or two, that definitely caused resentment with me. Mm-hmm. I had shared in a previous episode that the other designer that I worked with, she had resentment towards me because I was approved to go back to grad school. Mm-hmm. She wasn't. There was always a competition between us. Like, we would get told at the same time that maybe something needed to be updated. Mm-hmm. But I came into the office later. And so she might get briefed at 7 a.m. I didn't come in until 10:30. So I missed the brief. And then I had to be filled in on by her. Mm-hmm. And she might withhold information so that she could do certain aspects of it. And then I just kind of did the cleanup.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was just, like, things like that.
Hmm.
It was definitely, like – and then there's also just like people have different work ethics.
Yeah.
And you can't control mm-hmm. what somebody's going to do with their time.
Yep. Nothing that obvious in my space. I think that there's always a, and this is if you work in the UX field specifically, but if you work in an environment where you work with a project manager, engineering managers, an engineering team, your VP leadership and things like that, I think everyone's idea of the project is slightly different. So I think that we always face a little bit of team struggles with like what the most important thing would be. So you'd get like an initiative from your VP of product. That initiative would be slightly different from the engineering VP, which means that you guys are always on opposite sides of the spectrum. And you would create a design. Your engineers would be like, "We don't like this." I don't care if you don't like it. Build it. I already vetted it through our clients, built it. But what would happen is we'd create an initial design. We'd user test it. We'd do all of this stuff without considering the engineering team. And then when they got it, they would be like, "Oh, this is really difficult to make. If we did it this way, it wouldn't be." So I think that there was some team frustration in the beginning about like what that relationship looks like, how much validation we need from our engineering counterparts as far as like design is concerned. And that always seemed like a place of contention between the UX team or the product team and the engineering team. I think we eventually got to a place of consensus where we like developed a process that worked for everyone. But even in that process, we would always like hear a little bit of like, you know, I don't want to, it sometimes felt like I don't want to work on this as opposed to I'm not capable of committing to the design that you've put forward.
I think that is an honest conversation you need to have with everybody you work with. And this isn't for design, but for you and me, mm-hmm. we, you know, we're kind of like, I think we're working on the same stuff. And so it was like, we would just decide, you know what, I'm going to start the proposal. Mm-hmm. You come in and review. I'll address the changes. You send it off.
Yeah.
Then it's a very clear cut who's mm-hmm. doing what. We're not, I mean, we use a lot of templated stuff. If I'm reinventing something because maybe a proposal needs something very specific, mm-hmm. I'll tag you and be like, "Yeah, what do you think? Does this fit? Mm-hmm. Is this ideation like completely, you know, bonkers or whatever?" Mm-hmm. And then we were manually putting in the pricing. We had a pricing Excel sheet and then we were putting it in manually. And then you were like, "Why don't we just copy and paste?" Like, so you do, you need to have a conversation with the people you work with and pick out what it is you're going to work with. Mm-hmm. And like, you're going to do social media. I'm going to work on the SEO side. Mm-hmm. SEO doesn't mean that I'm not going to be able to do my part of social media. And mm-hmm. I know that me scheduling my own posts and doing things, it's not going to upset you. Likewise, if you post a blog, I'm not going to be like, "She didn't run this by me."
Yeah.
Like, I'll just go in and I'll adjust the keywords, you know?
I usually will tag you. I give you like 24 hours to respond. I'm like, "If I don't hear from her in 24 hours, I'm putting this blog up here."
Yeah, you just do it. I just queued up like 3 blog posts and I was like, "Yeah, I text you. I was like, they're queued. Just go look at them if you want."
Nope, I will never look. But one of the things that I think isn't as clear in a corporate environment is swim lanes. So on a product team, it's everyone's responsibility to like fight towards the initiative, whatever the initiative. Let's say it's to drive more customers to the application page. It's everyone's responsibility to get people to the application page, but the way that we all do it is different. And I think from a product standpoint, that's different. From an engineering standpoint, that's different. From a marketing standpoint, that's different. So sometimes in those larger corporate entities, it all feels like you guys are fighting against each other when you're all really driving towards the same initiative. And unless there's communication, it always felt like a little bit of like a headache, to me at least, in some of the places that I've worked. Some things happen incredibly smoothly, but there were some points where we're like, we're all fighting towards the same thing, but it feels like we're fighting each other to like get to the end.
Yeah, that's kind of how it felt too with me coming in later. Mm-hmm. I missed every morning meeting.
Yeah.
And I would bring it up. I'd be like to my boss and be like, I just don't feel like I'm part of the team mm-hmm. all the time. And like, because of the way the market opens and closes, that's why I worked mm-hmm. the hours I did, because I would work later and queue up reports for the next morning for mm-hmm. the market open. So somebody needed to be there late. That was me. I didn't have a family, mm-hmm. so I could be out late. I could sleep in.
Yeah.
but because I missed those meetings, I didn't feel like I was on the same page. So, you know, I would do something and be like, well, why did you do it this way? And I'm like, well, I was never briefed properly, you know? So
that's interesting.
I think, yeah. So, I mean, I talk about Wells Fargo in a very negative light, but I'm not going to lie. It was toxic.
I have a bank account with them.
They I do
my
too.
List of people I don't like. I've had this bank account with Wells Fargo though since I was like 18, so I'm gonna keep it because it's the longest
Look,
one.
There's nothing wrong with them as a bank.
Oh I yeah, just, there is. I don't like.
Well,
them.
Yeah.
I want to be clear. I don't like.
But
them.
I mean, I've talked about this before. I stayed because of the money, the mm-hmm. benefits, and I knew I was gonna branch out at some point. So I was like, I'll just ride this.
Yeah. So let's dive into a hot topic of us creatives in the big league, and that is navigating the career ladder. So one of the things that I hear from a lot of fellow designers is, I got into this corporate space. I don't know how to climb the ladder. I know I want to be a VP of design, or I just want to be a principal, or I want to be a staff designer, and I don't know how to shift myself from the job that I'm in right now to whatever the next position is. So when you were at Wells Fargo, like, what were the opportunities for growth? How did you get to that place? And like, what's a pathway that other people can explore?
So with my department, there was no up. Mm-hmm. You just had to completely change careers if you wanted to work in the same department.
Wow.
But there were lateral positions for mm-hmm. different departments. So if I wanted to be a creative and work more in the marketing side, like that was out in San Francisco. If I wanted to be on like the branding team and stuff, if I was going to do another realm of like maybe wealth management, then I would, you know, I could do a lateral down to Raleigh, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of both exciting at the possibility of moving and entering a brand new space mm-hmm. that I wasn't familiar with. But it's, you know, it's exciting because you get to learn and you're not feeling stagnant anymore.
Yeah.
So definitely looking online, seeing if there's any opportunities. Also just working and having a really good relationship with your team. You know, one of your coworkers is moving on up, then you know there's going to be a position open mm-hmm. and, you know, you've had the opportunity to prove yourself.
Yeah.
Keep, you know, going buddy-buddy with you, mm-hmm. know, whoever's going up and the hiring manager.
Yeah.
Because corporations do not, it costs more to onboard than it is to, you know, hire within. So.
Yeah. I can give you a positive and negative experience as far as career growth is concerned. I will say for a lot of the corporate jobs that I worked in, I didn't experience career growth and I wasn't really sure. It wasn't really clear to me how to get to the next level. And I think that's the corporate side of it, which is that there weren't clear indications of like what's necessary for you to get to the next step. Not clear as far as like you're going to be a junior designer for a year. And then after a year, we evaluate your skill set and we see if we can move you up to a mid-level designer, to a senior designer. Like that wasn't clear. It was very ambiguous. And then it wasn't clear what the responsibility, how the responsibilities changed from being a junior to a mid-level to a senior. So I think that was unclear in a lot of the spaces that I was in. I did apply for a position one time at a company where I was working on. I was like amazing. Let me say, I was amazing, guys. I was an amazing
Still is.
Yeah, designer. I was doing everything right. I was winning like awards, like company awards too. Like out of all the 250 companies in the world, Monique is the best this person. But that didn't extrapolate to me getting a higher position or getting a raise. So when I would ask the question, they'd be like, oh, we just don't think you're ready. And I'm like, why do you keep giving me awards if you don't think that I'm ready to move to the next level? Or like, how? I'm like, so what's the point of getting the awards? If you're saying, oh, you're the most on time, you're the most prepared, you're the most creative, you're the most da 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 da, how is that not extrapolating into another position that you could elevate me to? So I think that that was a problem for me.
The other thing is that they don't necessarily advertise that they're hiring. Like you need to be on the lookout. If you are feeling stagnant and you're like, I'm ready for more responsibility. Mm-hmm. I'm ready for more leadership opportunities. Then you need to go on the company website to find these out, or you need to be really close with management and they might tell you or they might not because, you know, it could be like confidential or whatnot. So you have to be on the lookout. It's not like they put something on the, you know, kitchen fridge and says, you know, marketing manager position open. Internal staff preferred, you know, you'll move to the second floor instead of the third.
And then I was going to say the second example I had was I was a senior UX designer at a company. And let's say I got really clear about telling people exactly what I wanted when I was working in a corporate environment. So I would say like, oh, I know that I want to be here in a year. How do I get to that place? And that's what I would center all of my like quarterly reviews around. It's like, what does it take for me to get to this next level? And I started that with our VPs as soon as they walked in the door. Like if I was there before them and they came in, you have that like initial meeting with them where it's like, let's get to know you. Let's talk about career growth in that first meeting so that you know that I'm serious about growing and that you could keep that in the back of your head. We can talk about pleasantries later. You're going to be here for a while. But let's talk about how I elevate to this position. I will say that I have asked a VP for a raise on his first day. I don't care. I have no shame. I was like, yeah, let's talk about money because I need more of it. It's exactly what I said. Let's talk about money because I need more of it. And he laughed. And I was like, no, I'm serious. I think I set the tone in those relationships that like, hey, I want to continue to advance monetarily, but I also wanted to continue to grow in my education and the leveling that I had. And that was important to me. I want to set the tone of that in our relationship so that as we continue moving forward, that you understand what my purview and perspective is. I don't want to look back on a quarterly review and you say, well, you really haven't indicated to me that you were actually interested in moving up. So I thought you were content where you were. I'm never going to be content. Being stagnant is not my strong suit. I want to elevate. How do I do that? So when I started to make that more known around our company, because I told the CEO too, same thing, I ain't shy. Hey, I want more money and I want this. Let's figure out how we can get me to the place that I want to get to. I don't recommend you telling that to your CEO. I just have a very casual relationship with everyone. And I don't care. I'm like, jobs are a dime a dozen. I can get another one. One of the things that I think that was intentional on my part was being very specific about telling people what I am actually looking for and what I wanted. And then I think as I started to tell people, that's when I got the things that I wanted. So my first raise at that company was from senior UX designer to UX design manager. So managing our team or helping manage our team. And then I went from UX design manager to senior staff designer because we had laid off our design team and I ended up being the only person left. I'm the only one. So you can't manage anybody when you're the only one. But I think that all of those moves, so I think the first move to the second move, I got a $25,000 raise. And then the second move to the third one, I got an additional $20,000 raise. So in the, you know, 2 or 3 years that I was at this company, I got a raise of almost $50,000 just by being really intentional. And I mean, I did all of the other stuff too. Like you join the ERGs and you, you know, go to all the networking stuff and like talk to people and make your presence known within a corporation. But I think what really helped me in a corporate entity was getting really specific about what I want and what I didn't want. And when you go into corporate, at least the companies I've worked at, there are two different tracks. They ask you if you want to be a manager, like in a managerial track, or they ask you if you want to be an individual contributor. So it just means, hey, do you want to manage people one day or do you just want to become a specialist in what you're doing?
And that either track is completely fine.
Exactly. But that track helps you to figure out what you should be pulling yourself into and what you should try to steer away from.
Sometimes I think when you're interviewing for a job and they're like, you know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Not doing what I'm doing now.
Not even here, guys. Sorry. But interesting, nonetheless. What opportunities for growth do you see large organizations offer for creative professionals?
With the larger corporations, and I've already we've already kind of touched on this, is the idea of like relocating. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I love to travel. I don't have a close-knit family where I am. It's not like I've got 25 aunts and uncles who will be devastated if I go somewhere new. Mm-hmm. But I think the idea of travel is exciting. The idea of completely changing departments. Larger organizations are going to have different departments. They're all going to need a designer. I mean, otherwise you're just going to inundate one department. Mm-hmm. Like with Wells Fargo, there was branding departments or like marketing departments for each of the facets. It just, otherwise it's just too much. Mm-hmm. And each one had its own individual brand. So I think it's also exciting to move around the organization and learn something else. You become more versed in the organization.
Yep.
You could, I mean, like at that point, like your values must really align with the company, which mm-hmm. is exciting.
Yeah.
We just had a conversation with our former classmates, and they were talking about, you know, moving, and how they found jobs mm-hmm. or, and our one friend Tracy, who you'll hear from soon, mm-hmm. she said that the company she worked for her corporate climb, mm-hmm. she interviewed, it was for a remote position, and she was like, all right, I'm going to go move to Austin. So she was able to take that opportunity of the promotion, of the responsibilities, and the fact that it was now remote, mm-hmm. and go travel, which is what she's always wanted to do.
Yeah.
So I guess there can be freedom with corporate,
yeah.
especially with the remote. She said there's a corporate office in her city, so she goes and checks in every once in a while. Mm-hmm. Which I think shows initiative yeah. on her part if she doesn't even need to go in. Mm-hmm. It shows team building. But those are like my two main things. Like I'm going to just project myself here because I want to travel mm-hmm. and I want to experience new things. I don't want to be – I mean, I experienced this for so long where I was just doing the same thing on repeat. So yeah. having an opportunity to just move around a company
yeah.
internally or like geolocation.
Yeah. I always tell junior designers – that when you just get out of school, I think it's really important for you to go work at a big organization. I think that's where you like, you know, drag your heels through the mud, like get into the nitty gritty of all the things. But I also think it's where you have the least amount of responsibility. You're never going to let a billion-dollar, you know, campaign go out the door with only your eyes seeing it. You're never going to make as huge of a mistake as you would working at a startup in a large organization because there are so many checks and balances. It's really the time where you get to like, you know, dig in, understand, learn, absorb. You have the ability to move laterally across the company inside of different departments and different divisions. You can move to a different subset or area. So you really like, you know, get all of the things that you need. And then as you gain more experience, I would transition to a mid-sized company where you get a little bit more ownership, a little bit more responsibility. And then when you get some more years of experience, you move to potentially a startup. When you're at a startup, you're everything to everyone. You're the designer for branding and marketing. You're also the UX designer. You're also a videographer. You're also the everything to every single person who needs design services inside of an organization. But you're better equipped because you have this experience at a large organization, medium-sized organization, to get to that place. So I always tell people as when you're in a place of being a junior, that I think you should work for as big a company as will hire you so that you can kind of grind your bones. And even if you're doing something that's just not as enticing as like creating a design or conceptualizing from scratch, you're doing something that you can see potentially out in the real world. And it shows you all of the nitty gritty things. Because sometimes I think as a junior designer, those are the things that you miss. Like I've taken design tests as a junior designer where it was like, find the typos in this InDesign doc. How do you replace a link if links are missing? How do you, you know, do a drop cap? How do you add a shadowing to this? Like those are simple, basic things that I think you truly have to understand. How do you edit 500 photos in an hour if you have to, which you can do. But action. I was like, but as a junior, you can create a script. You should create scripts. Yep. But I'm like, but as a junior, did I not go through hand by hand and edit 500 photos? Yes, because that is a thing that you can do because you don't have the context to know better. So I think working at a larger organization, you get to pick up all these tips and tricks from all these different people who have more experience than yourself. And then as you elevate yourself, you can go to a potentially a smaller company if that's what you wish.
Yeah. So I have two things. One is that when you're starting off fresh out of college or you've just pivoted into design, I would agree with you to work at a larger corporation because then when you are ready to move on to your next position, how much more impressive is it when you say, I worked for Wells Fargo. Now you're going down to a more local branch and like, okay, she has the corporate training. She mm-hmm. knows the regulations.
Yep.
She understands branding.
Yep.
She can help elevate us. Mm-hmm. So there's more value, I think, in that regard. The other thing is that when you have a large team and you're talking about getting things out the door and finding errors, the one thing I really did like is that we would print out documents and we would sit around a table mm-hmm. with a red pen and do this very old fashioned.
Yep.
And we would just circle the mm-hmm. errors before it went to print.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it was everybody's responsibility.
Yeah.
It wasn't just that I missed that error. It was that four people at the table missed the error. Mm-hmm. And I always like to challenge myself, you know, if we're printing out a 200 page booklet, I like to find one wrong thing on every page. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's that this kerning should have been better.
Yep.
Maybe it's the line height of something or the way something was positioned. I always wanted it to be slightly better. Mm-hmm. So it set like little goals for me. But yeah. when you do find yourself in a situation where like, hey, we just printed this out. It was $300,000, huge error on it. Mm-hmm. It's not just your responsibility at that point. It is the entire team. It is the entire department. So you are not taking the brunt of that. It's not like everybody's coming down on you mm-hmm. because there were other people who may have even been more senior than you who were supposed to give their approval mm-hmm. before it went out.
Yeah.
So even though you may have done the majority of the work and everything, it becomes when it's a team project, it definitely takes the stress off of you and your individual responsibility.
Yeah. And I will say another thing that I think you get when you work at a large organization is that you have to develop those soft skills. You're a designer at a company. Your opinion is not always going to matter in the bottom line. Like every single thing that you do is not going to be taken and someone's going to run with it. They're not going to always want to validate your concept and idea. But I think it's important for you to be able to have the soft skills to know when to fight or advocate for something and when to walk away and be like, this isn't mine at the end of the day. I think that's one thing that junior designers get wrong is that they get too attached to the things that they're producing for someone else. It's not yours at the end of the day. It belongs to a company that has a very specific image and they're going to build it in the way that they want to build it. They're going to do it in the way that they want to do it. And you are just a vessel to complete that task.
Yeah. But I think as a junior designer, they don't expect you to get it right.
Yeah.
They want you to lay the foundation. Mm-hmm. They will come in and teach you like this more senior
yeah.
designers come in. They show you how they like it done. And then you learn. Mm-hmm. Once you know how to do it right, you put yourself in a position where you can teach other new hires. You can move up in a managerial position. Mm-hmm. And it's just like what I said with, it's easier to promote within than it is to hire new people.
Yeah.
And I don't like, even with me hiring interns, I'll give them an assignment. I don't expect them to get it right. I want to see what they can come up with. I want to see their best. Mm-hmm. And then normally we'll schedule like 1 hour a week. We'll go over their designs and I'll tell them, you know, I would have done this because of this. Mm-hmm. And I've never had an intern like, you know, yeah. like, first of all, that's unprofessional. Mm-hmm. But two, like they genuinely appreciate the feedback so that they can be stronger.
Yeah.
So you have to take all this feedback and criticism with grace and mm-hmm. know that people aren't critiquing you to put you down. They're telling you so that you can become a better designer.
Yeah. What's the one or the most valuable thing you've learned for working in a corporate environment?
Oh gosh, don't let the money and the benefits keep you stagnant. I'm sorry, everybody. I know I'm always so negative about Wells Fargo and Monique's worked so many amazing opportunities and I'm just like negative Nancy over here. But I just talk about it because I want you to learn from my mistakes. Yeah. Don't stay stagnant like I did.
Yeah.
That would be my big thing because when you're in the same position for 8 years, they're like, well, why didn't you move?
Yeah. I would say that my biggest takeaway as a junior working for someone else is that the most valuable thing that I think I got out of working at a large corporation was the ability to see other designers work. Once I was able, because I think that when you're a junior, at least this was true for me, when I saw like this incredible concept that someone came forward with, I'd be like, I don't even know how the hell they did that.
I know.
I have no idea. I was like, I can't even tell you step one to like get to the place that they are. And when I was able to like get a hold of their Photoshop files or Figma files or whatever the case is and peel back the layers, it made it so much easier to understand.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. I was like, it just, I was like, once I could see, because Photoshop, I don't know why, but it just perplexed me when I was a junior designer. I was like, I don't get it, guys. I don't understand what's happening here. Like, it's supposed to be for photo editing. Why are you making things in there? But our senior designer would always make her like concepts or some portion of her concepts inside of Photoshop. And then she used Illustrator for other things. But
that's backwards.
Yeah. But if I show you, the files were amazing. Huge, but amazing. But when I started to be like, she made this design where she created a bus inside of Photoshop. It's a legit bus. Looks like a real bus. And I was like, how did she get the grooves in the tire? And I was like, oh, these are shadows. I was like, oh, they're individual shadows that are like this. And then they're grouped together. And to watch all the nested layers, I was like, I'm dumb, apparently.
It's like, I've got my kindergartner and my preschooler, and it's like you give them a coloring sheet and they take the blue and they're coloring the sky. What does mommy do? I grab several shades of blue and a gray and, you know, they start to see the shading that it's – the sky is not just blue. It's many colors. Yep. And as a designer, as you're peeling back the layers, you realize like, you know, it's more than just color. It's texture.
Yes.
It's shadowing.
Yes. And which is not something I think they teach you in design school. Because I feel like all of the designs that I created in design school were very flat.
Yes.
Like I was
100%
like,
agree.
I don't think that I ever did anything where I was like, I need to layer this in order to create dimensionality. It wasn't until I graduated and started looking at other designers' files, which was really helpful for me, that I was like, oh, like, it's just not supposed to be like flat vectors everywhere. Like you're supposed to layer.
Yeah, I really appreciate that when you designed our website that you put like a grainy... Yeah. Filter on the
I
background.
Textures now. Thank you, Amy McCormadale. She's the one who put me on to textures. May God rest her soul. She's the person who was like, you got to add texture. It has to feel like it. And even when I like paint walls and stuff now, I'm like, there's no texture in here, Brian. He's like, baby, it's a wall. It doesn't need texture. Let's just move
just
on.
Just the wallpaper. I love my wallpaper.
I'm like, it needs to give something. And he's like, oh, gosh, I just want to paint and be done with this. So sorry, babe.
All right. Any final thoughts?
No, I will. I will say working at a big organization will have its pluses and minuses, I think. But the only thing that I think that you can do in those environments is just like absorb all of the context that you could possibly be a part of. Meet all the people that you could possibly meet. Be curious about all of the things, because I think that the more curious you are, the more people you meet, the better you set yourself up for making a lateral move or making a move out of the door. And it just helps you as a designer. It just helps you grow and build your soft skills, because there are so many people out there without soft skills who don't know how to talk to clients, don't know how to talk to people. And it is really affecting their ability to be tangible out here in the world.
Yeah, and don't let branding regulations confine you. Allow yourself the opportunity to expand on that. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to be creative and present both something that may be out of the box and as well as something that, oh, this is what the template said.
Yep.
You can still allow yourself to have that creativity. And like I said at the beginning, we talk a lot about entrepreneurship and being an agency owner, but there is nothing wrong with choosing a corporate lifestyle or with deciding to go out on your own. Mm-hmm. And for me, corporate wasn't good, but we've talked to so many people and that's where they thrive because they get so much more support.
Yep.
But, you know, us individually as mothers and just based on our experiences, agency ownership was the best choice. Mm-hmm. But regardless of your career path, it's not necessarily a bad decision.
I go back to corporate depending on how much money they owe me. They want to pay me like, you know, a couple hundred thousand. And I'll be like, hey, let's get back in there. Let's wrap this episode up. It was so wonderful to see you guys or have you see us. We'll see you later.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
As we conclude another episode of the Design Imposter Podcast, remember, self-doubt may be a universal experience, but it should never define your worth or potential.
Embrace the power of your creativity, trust in your abilities, and continue creating fearlessly. You belong in this space, and your contributions are invaluable to your community and those around you.
Thank you for being a part of the Design Imposter community, and don't forget to subscribe and follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and leave a review to help other imposters find us.
Until our next episode, keep those headphones ready.